Yeah, my name is Luz, Luzaida Ruiz, and I come from Tijuana and do work in Chiapas.
Nantimo, I've been working in Chiapas, covering many issues there for quite some time, actually. I've been covering certain issues since as early as 94 in Chiapas.
A really big issue going on right now, and something that people are organizing around is what is called the Plan Puebla Panamá. Puebla Panama Plan, and which is sort of a several steps forward to the NAFTA, and which is a project being it's a project that President Vicente Fox from Mexico and together with the presidents of Central America, all the way from Mexico to Panama, are trying to. In this plan, they're trying to build, they have this whole project to develop the whole area, to build roads, airports, shipping ports, to be able to have corridors to better transport products and materials because of the Panama Canal isn't serving. It's too busy. It's a lot of time. It's time consuming. So they're thinking of other ways to ship different merchandise and products. But the thing is that throughout those corridors, they're also thinking of building maquiladoras or sweatshops. If we also think about in terms of the NAFTA and what that brought in terms of the sweatshops being built around the north of Mexico, we see all the consequences and problems, not only environmental, but also labor issues and just and specifically for women, which are the ones who basically work in the maquiladoras. So in a setting of the south of Mexico and throughout all Central America, we are seeing that and a lot of these different groups, different coalitions being built to sort of organize around the Plan Puebla Panama because it's going to bring a lot of problems for them.
The communities, the majority of the communities that the Plan Puebla Panamá will affect are certainly rural, agricultural-based communities, communities that have for a long time and still do depend primarily on the production of maize or corn. One of the huge pressures that these communities are suffering right now that is sort of a preliminary effect of the Plan Puebla Panamá, but definitely an effect of the globalization and things that are happening along these lines, is genetically modified organisms. Those GMOs, as they're called, genetically modified organisms, the main one is maize that's just flooding Mexico right now at this point. Mexico is the largest producer of the most varied, some 30 different types of corn, if not many more. I think it's many more. I'm probably wrong about just 30. But they have so many different types of maize. It's the origin of maize and corn in the Americas. And genetically modified organisms or genetically modified maize is just rampantly running through southern Mexico right now. It can even be spread via wind blowing seeds from one community to another community. Many of these programs are programs that have been run through CONASUPO, through CEDESOL, through Solidaridad, government programs that have essentially shipped corn or maize into communities as humanitarian type of measures to get them to have better production initially or even to supplement their diets. And this has created a huge problem in those areas and is breaking down traditional farming techniques in many of the areas in southern Mexico all the way down through Central America.
One of the things that I understood that with the implementation of NAFTA was that Article 25, I believe, of the Mexican Constitution was repealed.
It was Article 27.
27, okay.
Article 27 of the Mexican Constitution is the ejido structure or the creation of communal land holdings that are known as ejidos. A United States-imposed clause prior to the signing of the North American Free Trade Agreement, the NAFTA, was the dissolution of Article 27 before the United States would sign on to that so-called trilateral agreement. The reason being is that ejidos, or the communal land holdings that were established at the time of the Revolutionary War, just post-Revolutionary War in Mexico, created communal land holdings that the community themselves could not sell off, and certainly could not sell off as individuals. So that meant no privatizing that land. Now, in order to privatize a huge section of rural Mexico, which would then hence open up that land, which is previously communal land holdings, for now oil exploration, mineral resource exploration, biopiracy or bioprospecting, as the corporations call it. In order for that to happen, we have to, or the governments and the corporations needed to dissolve Article 27 in order to be able to slowly privatize or certify, as it's called in legal terms in Mexico, certify that land so that it could be then sold off by individuals of each of those ejidos. Previously to this, an entire ejido would have to agree upon 100% consensus the selling of any land, and then it would be sold to the government or turned over to the government in exchange for an equal amount of land or equal indemnization of funds for that. Now, with the dissolution of Article 27 as in 1994, the ejido lands have become certified, privatized, and individuals can sell that off. What does that mean? What it means is that if a corporation goes in to an area, or an individual goes into an area and begins to offer $10,000 to a campesino that's never had an opportunity to have any sort of income, that seems like a huge amount of money for 1, 2, 3, 4 acres of land. Their land might be worth much, much more, especially when you take into consideration that the majority of the people that have sold off land have then been forced into urbanizing, forced into the cities. Mexico City, the largest city in the world, has gotten nothing but bigger and bigger and bigger since 1994 and the implementation of the North American Free Trade Agreement. This is going to get worse, and other cities, Monterrey, the second largest city in Mexico, competing with Guadalajara for that stature, both of which have over 7 million people in those cities. This urbanization and these cycles of migration towards the cities, as well as these cycles of migration towards the northern border and the maquiladoras, is something that is very much an effect of the dissolution of ejido lands, communal land holdings, and the destruction of the social weaving or the social network in communities rurally in Mexico.
Supposedly, there's a special clause in the NAFTA agreement that there's supposed to be this specific office that deals with any type of, if people want, I don't know if they see problems or if they sort of can denounce certain issues or things that are wrong with the NAFTA. What it seems is that either the cases that have gone through that office, they are not really treated with all the scrutiny, and it's just a lot of entanglings and different things that they do not make the process easy or accessible for the people to actually go through it and really have their problem resolved.
Is there a resistance within the communities to not sell at this point once that they know that this is the process, or are they hypnotized by the dominant culture money?
No, many, 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 many communities, indigenous communities in particular, and rural communities also, and throughout Mexico have resisted this and resisted it tremendously. What we're looking at now in Chiapas in particular is sort of an after effect of the NAFTA, but something that's very much integrated into the NAFTA and very much an infrastructure springboard for the FTAA, or the Free Trade Area of the Americas, which is the Plan Puebla Panamá. Much of the Plan Puebla Panamá is creating a situation in Chiapas in particular where we're looking at economic blackmail. This is a buzzword that's been tossed out a little bit here and there, but it's very, very real and very, very deep driving and hard hitting. What this means basically is that maquiladoras are coming into the zone, setting up an infrastructure that are going to slowly try to draw people away from the land. So they first attack or promote themselves as being, this is the maquiladoras, the sweatshops, promote themselves as being the sort of liberator for women, the women that have not had an opportunity, especially in indigenous communities in the south, in Chiapas, the Tzaltal, Tzotzil, the Tojalabal, the Chol, have very, very specific gender roles. Yeah. Maquiladoras on the fronts of their doors, the new ones that are being built in San Cristóbal de las Casas and Chiapas, say opportunities for women, women's opportunities. And this is a scheme to draw women away from the communities, because as you begin to draw women away from the communities, making it seem as if there's a wonderful opportunity for women to have employment. And Luz, I think you can get into some of the things that they'll experience once they get into the maquiladoras. But drawing the women away from the communities, breaking down the social weaving and the social tejido of the community structure there, then it begins to become slightly easier for interesting or intriguing offers to reach the communities themselves, as people have been pulled away from the rural land to then say, now's the time to make an offer to these communities for X amount of money to buy that community, because this is an area where we think that there might be a fair amount of bioprospecting that can take place, or this series of communities in this region where that can take place, and begin to slowly take that, purchase those communities, and pull people further and further off the land as the youth begin to pull away, especially the young women.
We can see, we have examples of that in the north of Mexico, especially in Tijuana, in Ciudad Juarez, in Monterrey, and not even so north of Mexico, but also in Puebla, Estado de Mexico, that there's a lot of factories there. And as Timo was saying, they present themselves as this sort of liberation opportunity for women. But what something that different women's groups and formed by women who work in the maquiladoras and who are living the problems there is that there's a lot of health risks. There are a lot of health issues that go on there because a lot of the maquiladoras work with different toxic materials, and that women start having, women and men with the toxic, by handling toxic materials, they start getting many sicknesses. They also, and specifically for women, they have a lot of reproductive health problems because of also the toxic and these materials. They do not form fat, and we all need fat in our bodies, and especially for pregnant women, the fetus first starts forming itself by fat, and especially the brain. So a lot of brainless babies have been born in places where a lot of maquiladoras or women have worked in these sweatshops or these factories. And a very extreme example, but very real, is what is going on in Ciudad Juarez. In Ciudad Juarez, there has been around 247 assassinations of maquiladora women workers in a period of around 2 years, and there's another 400 women missing. And it's the women who work in the maquiladoras are women who come from rural settings, driven by this need to have income for their families, to feed their own children, their brothers, their sisters, to have an income for in order for the family to survive, and also driven by this promise of them being able to work, to have this liberation, to have a space for themselves, make a little bit of money, be independent. But they're driven into cities where they don't have that same social fabric and social networks, where their families, their neighbors, people they know can support and just have that security or a little backbone to whatever can happen to them and help them out. So they go into the cities, they live in shanty towns where they have no electricity, no water, access is very bad. There's this one bus that will go from the factory to their towns, and the drivers who are the ones who drive these buses, they're implicated in different mafias that have to do with drugs, with, and it's just sort of they are the most vulnerable people in the social scale of these big cities. So they become pretty vulnerable, and those are some of the things that women in the South are going to be exposed to.
When you say assassinations and then 400 women missing, is there any kind of investigation as to what exactly is happening?
Yes, there's even a special office created within the police structure in Ciudad Juarez, a special office to investigate these cases. But it seems that throughout these 2 years that this office was created is that the whole procedure of how you do a criminal investigation is very corrupted and it's not very clear. From the moment that one woman is missing and the family can go to the police and say, my daughter, my sister, I don't know, my girlfriend, my wife is missing, the answers will be, well, you know, we have to wait 48 hours to see what's happening. She's probably with her boyfriend. Maybe she's just out with a lover, maybe. And it's very gendered, sort of degrading answers to that. And that's the first step. So after 48 hours pass, this woman hasn't appeared. Then they will file a missing person report. And just that process of getting the people who are supposed to help you, the police, to find your missing relative or your missing person, they don't make it easy and they don't go through all that they have to do. And after that, 2 weeks, a month, 3 months will pass and suddenly a body appears in the desert or in the desert fields of Ciudad Juarez. And it's just all these sorts of different sketchy things that are happening because they will find the body and the bones will be completely either calcinated, or if you find a person a month later, the decomposition of the body won't be according to the time that has passed. And some of them will be the bones of the person, but the clothes will be different, or sometimes they'll be different clothes to same clothes but different bones, and they have done DNA sort of lab tests, and it's just sort of all these different things that are going on. And it seems that also there's a lot of implicated people. That's why it's not, and different levels within the organization, social structure of Ciudad Juarez. You have the police, you have the government, you have the maquiladora business owners, you have also some, Ciudad Juarez is a border town, so you also have the U.S. involved there, you have the drug dealers. So it's sort of like all these top power groups that are involved in that. And of course you have this this macho culture that it's become sort of this fight club kind of thing that is going on there, where a lot of people are involved, and you just I don't think the government can just go ahead and really, they've tried to nail some of these peoples, and they say, well, there's this mafia of drivers that are doing this. Then they put them into jail, but the assassinations keep on appearing. And then they put this person, Sharif, inside, and that they thought he was this manager, an engineer in the maquiladoras, who had several files here in the U.S. against him for either domestic violence or sexual harassment suits and stuff like that. And he was working there. He's in jail, and the assassinations keep on coming. Human rights groups, and that also different women's groups and just mixed groups are trying to tackle. That is something that me, many other women and people are concerned about, because it's so, because of the level of the people implicated, it's so difficult to tackle. But at the same time, there's also support and to sort of have the more inspiring, and to have what is being done about that is that we have the example of the South and of the Latin American countries and the Latin American women who are also coming together and that are trying to learn about these issues, how it's going to affect them, their families, and not only them as women, but also their husbands, their partners, their brothers, because it's everybody implied in this overwhelming thing that is going to come and crush them. So they're getting together, they're having gatherings, they're having forums, they're having encuentros where they're discussing all these issues, how it will affect women, how it will affect our traditional agricultural ways of doing things, how it will affect all sorts of different issues. I don't know if Timo, you want to add something.
If folks are interested in trying to support the women and the organizations and get more information out there to open that up, what can folks do up here in the north?
Well, I think an advantage that people here in the north have, it's a lot more easier to have access to media. There's a lot of independent media channels where a lot of different networks come together, not only media people, but also people who are in the communities, who are part of different NGOs, groups, coalitions. They can come together and raise awareness about these things that are happening. And like I said, Ciudad Juarez is an extreme example, but that doesn't mean that here in the United States or that in also other developed countries, these types of things are happening, and they're happening to women and to minority women. You have a lot of Chinese, a lot of Latino women from Mexico, from Guatemala, from Honduras, and all over the world who are working also in these factories and just in other different causes. So, you know, just try to get involved in that. You can look in the internet, you can talk to a local organization, and specifically for Ciudad Juarez, you can also. There's a video maker who's called Lourdes Portillo. She's from the Bay Area, and she actually has a documentary on what is going on Ciudad Juarez. It's called Señorita Extraviada. I don't know the name in English, but I think it's either a 60 or 90-minute documentary of what is going on there. And she talks to the families of those missing or assassinated women, and what they're going through, what their story is, and what they are doing to try and solve this problem.
I know that Democracy Now! Amy Goodman featured the woman that made that movie a couple weeks ago. So if you're interested out there in Radio Land, you could probably. Mm-hmm. Check out the archive for that. Maybe you could say the name of the movie one more time.
Señorita Extraviada by Lourdes Portillo. And if you do a search on the internet, it'll probably come up. Or Asesinadas de Juarez or Ciudad Juarez Assassinations or something like that.
Right. Many, many issues, not only in Chiapas, but in all of Mexico and Latin America right now. Something very much to keep your eyes on in the coming months and next year or so is most definitely the Plan Puebla Panama and how popular organizations are organizing around that, mobilizing around that, mobilizing for popular communication skills, mobilizing just to expand their own local struggles, everything from people in Honduras that have Copin that have been struggling against local dams, that are threatening to flood as many as 60,000 people out of their lands, to the 30-some-odd communities in Montes Azules or the Blue Mountains in Chiapas that are mainly Zapatista support-based communities that are struggling against the federal government and the state government because the UN named this year the Year of the Mountain for all of you mountain lovers, as much as I am myself. Love to frolic in the hills. But this particular declaration, which seems like a very benign declaration, something that can only help us, has actually been used by the Mexican government against the communities that have traditionally, for years and years and years and years, lived in the Blue Mountains, accusing them of not properly managing their land. So they're using that as a pretext to forcibly displace those people from that bioregion, while we know at the same time that that region is one of the most biologically diverse regions in all of Mesoamerica, has rather large oil deposits, a few uranium deposits, and this is merely a ploy to get people off that land so that corporations such as Pulsar Monsanto can go in, begin bio prospecting, and open up that land then for more exploration of the oil that's in that area. So communities such as those are struggling right now, as many others in other areas, against these sorts of plans, against the Plan Puebla Panamá, which again is just a stepping stone towards the FTAA. So we can take some of these things into consideration as the G8's just closing up in Alberta and think about how we're all affected by many of these same issues.
If folks wanted to get in touch with you guys and your and the organizations that you're working with, how would they do that?
A good source of information is the Chiapas Indie Media page. That's chiapas.indiemedia.org. And for other information or specific information, you can contact...
You can also write an email to info@chiapasindiemedia.org. That will also, we always check that email, so that's the best way to contact us.
And once again, we're speaking with...
This is Luz Ruiz from Chiapas, Mexico.
And Timo.